Hello, boys and girls. Welcome in to the Boys and Girl Podcast with Cowboys NFL Network reporter Jane Slater and NFL Network producer Bobby Belt. A Cowboys community with the inside scoop on the Dallas Cowboys. Now, coming straight to you from the Lone Star State, here's Jane and Bobby.
Touchdown, Jackson right up the middle. 37-yard run on 4th and 2.
Too many times we see it over and over that Dallas, they just give up gaps. They don't get off blocks.
How many times have we seen that, too? There's just nobody there.
I would say our finish was not good enough, clearly. Definitely in spots during the game.
Miles Boykin for the Baltimore touchdown. And he could not have been more wide open.
I think there's a lot of guys who have to take a hard look at themselves and ask what their effort's like.
We're disappointed. Make no bones about it. And that's all part of the focus moving forward as we prepare for Cincinnati.
Your effort has to be there. It's non-negotiable.
On the defensive side of the ball, especially the running game, we're not executing right now. We're not good at stopping the run.
I mean, you can't not be frustrated. Oh, I'm frustrated. I think if you aren't frustrated, then you don't give a so I mean. I know everyone in this locker room, in this building is frustrated.
Easy money. That's what that game was on the road against the Ravens for the Cowboys, sitting at 3-9. There's 4 games left. That's the silver lining, guys. But as we talk about easy money, it's easy talking with our next guest. We told you for the Cowboys community, we hope that this is a place where we can talk through what's going on this season, and we have certainly done that with Jesse Hawley here today. Bobby?
Yeah, excited to have him on. He is the, of course, as you mentioned later on, he's the former roommate of Dez Bryant. I know there were a lot of heartbroken people. We didn't get to see Dez Bryant. That was the one thing I was looking forward to this year. In the COVID year, I was like, we're going to get Dez Bryant, but that didn't happen. So we got the next best thing. We got Jesse Hawley to do a therapy session with us and talk through all the ills of the Dallas Cowboys and whether or not the big question I think everybody's asking right now is Mike McCarthy the man for this job? Joining us now is former Dallas Cowboys receiver Jesse Hawley. You can follow him on Twitter at Mr. Fourth and Long, and the fourth is with an actual number 4. Jesse also contributes to the large circus of DallasCowboys.com podcasts that are up to like 20 now for the week. But Jesse's involved there, and you can check him out there. And he's also going to talk to us today, not only about where the Cowboys are at, but also a great charity that he founded and that helps provide a good Christmas for needy kids this time of year. Jesse, how you doing?
I'm well, man. Oh, man, 2020 is almost over. Jesus Christ. I'm good. I really am. I've avoided all of the things that could be happening in what the world that we live in today. Still employed. I'm healthy. I'm on this side of the dirt. Life. You guys know me, man. I'm always positive, happy-go-lucky, dude. And so I like to spread that and you know, I want it to exude off of me, so I'm great.
Now, see, we do know you, and so one of the things you talked about with us last time, which was back last October, November, I think, and you had mentioned there, you had talked about how you are an admitted germaphobe, and so I'm curious. I haven't gotten a chance to ask you, how have you dealt with coronavirus era?
No, this is right up my alley. Like this is Jane, you and I worked at the same station before, not at the same time, but the same station. And I used to get hell from guys because I was spraying off mics and wiping surfaces down long before COVID got here. I was the guy who was like, you know, hey, I was fist bumping, like, you know, I'll be at the stadium, whatever. I'm like, hey, fist bump. I'm not shaking hands. Don't know where your hand's been. And they used to give me hell about that. And now everybody's like, oh, wash your hands, no shaking hands, slice all this. And I'm like, oh, I've been ahead of the game years before y'all jumped on the bandwagon. I'm not saying I knew COVID was coming, but I knew to make sure in the business that we work in, we're in the people business. So we're around people all day long. And I know how that stuff jumps from person to person. So I've been well ahead of the game. This is right up my alley. I just can't find the stuff that I normally use because everybody's hoarding it from, you know, from the store. Lysol wipes, hand sanitizer. So listen, I've been ahead of the game for a long, long time.
I love that you no longer feel like an outlier in that space. And to your point, look at us both thriving after getting getting booted from the fan.
I want to listen. I saw how JJ Barea, you know, he got fired and he got $2 million.
I know.
I'm like, damn, Gavin Spittle, hook me up. You should have gave me a, you know, a parting gift or something. You just fired me, man. You just let me, you know, we're doing fantastic. Thank those guys for all the opportunity that they gave me there. But yeah, I'm doing just fine.
You know, you are doing just fine because, as Bobby said, you contribute to so many shows because I think you have such a unique perspective. The fact that you really grinded to earn a spot on that Cowboys roster, it meant something to you. Mm-hmm. You were also there for a coaching change. From a bird's eye view, and I know you still talk to guys in the organization, what do you make of this season and the coaching staff?
It's difficult. It's difficult, and it's like the changing of relationships. I always tell, like, you know, if you're entering a new relationship, don't make the dude or the chick, I shouldn't say chick, don't make the dude or the girl pay back taxes. Right? So whatever happened in that previous relationship, don't make me pay back taxes for what he did. That's not me. And I shouldn't make you pay back taxes for what. But the thing is that it's inevitable that the residue of prior relationships will be there until you either have a chance to flush it all out or to find someone who is completely compatible to you without the other stuff. And so I think that's what you're looking at in this situation is you're seeing, here it is, and football is all about being hands-on. Most coaches across the National Football League, there's exceptions, but they aren't modern day Zoom, you know, let's do things technical. And they're not used to that. They're used to saying, hey, I got these X's and O's and I need to see and be a part of a tangible situation where I'm physically being able to touch guys and put guys on the field to implement my situation. And here it is. You're talking about coming into a franchise where you aren't ever really prepared to deal with all that Dallas brings until you're sitting in the seat. And that seat is hot from Jump Street. It's not like, hey, we're cool. No. When you jump into this frying pan, it's like cast iron skillet. It's already blazing. And people want immediate results, positive results. And so it's one of those situations where Mike McCarthy and his crew came into a situation that I promise you, he had no idea what he was truly getting into. And then now he's here and you're trying to implement things and systems and beliefs and all this kind of stuff. And I guarantee you Mike wasn't used to doing that all offseason via Zoom, right? And then I finally get a chance to touch the players and to kind of really get around them. And I got 4 weeks. I got 4 weeks to implement what I want to implement, see it. The pool of players around the league is dried up. I can't bring guys in because protocols and so on and so forth. Oh, by the way, I have to evaluate and build a roster in 4 weeks and still implement an offensive, defense, and a special teams and get ready for week one of the season. And so all these things are happening, and I'm doing it under this microscope of being the head coach of the world's most recognizable franchise. So you add all that to the mix, man, it has been, you know, and then each week it's a new story, right? Oh, well, my quarterback's gone. Oh, my left tackle's gone. Oh, my right tackle's gone. And all of a sudden guys can't play football and you're trying to literally, as fast as you're trying to get the water out of the boat, someone else is drilling more holes into your boat every single week. And you're drowning, and you're waiting for a moment for it all to stop. And it doesn't. It doesn't, because every 3-4-letter network you want to put, what's on the A block? Dallas Cowboys. What's on the B block? Dallas Cowboys. And now I'm trying to get a team together, and COVID, and games are being canceled, and players are being hurt, and I'm trying to shovel this water, and it's more holes. So it's been an experience to say the least.
I want to follow up before Bobby jumps in. What does it take for a coach to endear himself to a player? In other words, we're seeing it in other places that have had similar challenges. I've referenced Ron Rivera with Washington. We're finally seeing it with Joe Judge and the Giants. I was really impressed with the way players talked about and bought into Kevin Stefanski when I recently did the Browns-Titans game. So you saw my report, you know, week four, guys were checking out. What could Mike have done, or have you talked to some guys yourself, have done better to endear himself to these guys?
When you talk about the new age athlete, you talk about guys who need, I don't want to use the word friendship, but I want to use the word that you have to feel like you and I are on the same page. It's not a friendship, because that's the wrong terminology to use. But I think with Mike, he has to do a better job of appearing to be vulnerable to his players, appearing to be a guy who understands his players, and then try. And that's the best way about going about this, is being able to encapsulate this sort of friendship that, yes, I'm your superior, am I your boss, but I'm rowing with you. You know what I'm saying? I think that's what Ron Rivera gives off. Everybody talk about Ron Rivera, everybody loves, you feel the man about Ron Rivera. Like, you feel like Ron Rivera, I can go and talk to him, and it's a conversation, and it's not a chastisement. He expects a lot of you, but he's also willing to give himself. And I think those are the type of things that players in the 2020 era, that's what becomes more appealing and more revealing to players, and gets them to, you know, play a little bit harder for you.
You know, the word that one of the players used in Cleveland was, he vibes with us. There's a
there
vibe.
It is. That, there
relatable.
It is. There it is. So that's the young person term.
I don't.
It's a vibe.
When I thought about that, I was like, I would love to be in a room when players felt like they were vibing with Mike McCarthy. Because I don't right. know. Like, you feel like you catch a vibe from Matt Rhule.
Right.
You catch a vibe maybe from Joe Judge, although I've heard he's a little tricky. You catch a vibe with Sean Payton, right? Like,
right.
Sean's got, like, the boom boxes in the locker
right.
room, the smoke machine. He's dapping up players, and he's it. I don't get – it leaked that he did a watermelon smash to get players hyped, but yet – also told us that week that what happens in player meetings stay in player meetings, but it was okay for us to find out about him smashing watermelons, which I thought was interesting. So I was just kind of curious your take on how did Jason Garrett vibe with guys? Because I never heard, there were guys that didn't get along with Jason Garrett over the years, but I never got the sort of pushback that I've heard with this group.
I've always said this about Jason Garrett, and I never vibed, and a lot of people never vibe with Jason Garrett as a coach, but I understood and vibe with Jason Garrett as a man.
Hmm.
And so if I can talk to you and come to you as a man, there's this level of respect, even if I don't mutually agree with everything you do as far as coaching. Not everybody's able to separate the two, right? It's like sometimes everybody just that you have you just throw all one thing in the pot, just this gumbo style things. And if I don't like his policies, and I don't like this, and I don't like that, and it's everything's just all jumbled in it. And maturity allows you to be able to say, "Hey, I may not agree with everything and how you do things here, but boy, do I respect you over here." And that kind of almost lends for you to at least listen to the things that you may not always agree with. And the thing that Jason had also, especially early in his career, he had a good mix. He had a good mix of vets that were kind of being ushered on the way out, with the younger group. And you've talked about that. You've got to talk about that a lot of times where with Tony, it was like Tony didn't catch the vibe with Zeke and all the rest of the guys. He was like, yo, you guys want to do what? What is that you listen to? And Tony's like, I can't quite, you know, my vibe ain't quite there. And so there was this disconnect. There was this, and it's kind of almost like that wave that was a younger wave have now become the elder statesmen in the locker room, and their vibe is different. And then you bring in this coach, and I think in Mike McCarthy, who is more old school, right? He's more of the, he's cut from that old school cloth. And so, again, even the whole Zoom situation thing for him is like a new battle. I remember I get a chance to speak to the rookies every single year, and he jumped on the Zoom call about 10 minutes beforehand, and he and I had a chance to just chop it up, you know, just chop it up. And one of the things that he said, I hate this. I hate this. He goes, I hate this because this doesn't give them a chance to impact. And when players don't get a chance to align with your vision and your vision align with those players, there is this disconnect and there is this fight. Now, I don't think it's all Mike. Some of these players that you know, we talk about the brands, some of these guys aren't holding up their end of the bargain, and it's just making for just an absolute cluster F of a mess that we've seen through 12 weeks of the season.
Real quick, did you vibe with him?
With who?
With Mike and your brief interaction.
Yeah, I mean, we were 10 minutes, and it was what he was saying about how he wanted to implement respect. And, you know, because I asked him, I said, Coach, normally I don't get a chance to, you know, when I was there with Jason never came into those meetings when I was there and speaking. He was like, well, I want to make sure I show guys about respect. This, you're a guest in my house, and this is my house, and so I want to make sure I come and pay you respect and let these guys know, like, you know, hey, if Coach is here 10 minutes before, you should be here 10 minutes before. And I was like, I'm with that, because there's a level of just, you know, some guys just kind of don't quite understand that. And sometimes it can be, though, here's another meeting that we have to sit in again on a Tuesday. Oh, my God. And it was like, no, this is someone who's coming to speak to you, who's sat in your seats, and you should pay him the respect. You should give him the respect that you would give me, because he's here as our guest. You know, and so that was a good situation that we vibed on. And it was early talks of how he wanted things to go for that team. And so, you know, yeah, I vibe with him.
You know, we've drawn this comparison a little bit here in terms of, you know, maybe how difficult the transition has been for guys with Jason Garrett's leadership style, the way Jason Garrett, I mean, for all of Jason Garrett's faults, I think most everybody in that locker room felt like Jason Garrett at least cares about me on a level that like transcends football. Like, I connect with this guy as sort of a fatherly figure or a respect figure. But outside of just that one transition, I think when you look across the position groups, you know, and are very close with John Kitna and the way John Kitna operates and the way John Kitna connects with people. We know the way Chris Richard tried to connect with guys and tried to reach guys. Rod Marinelli was that way. Mark Colombo was one of the guys. Mark Colombo was basically handpicked by the offensive line as, this is the guy we want in the room with us. And so when you look across the board at all these different types of coaches, Gary Brown, who, you know, was like dad to the running backs group, and you look at how all these coaches throughout the entire coaching staff reached these guys, do you think that with or without Zoom, just the unique makeup of last year's staff and how many guys were about the person, even on the assistant coach level, that there was going to naturally be a little bit of an uncomfortable curve, I guess, that you know, this isn't every single guy at every single position group pretty much had somebody who tried to reach them as people. And that's not necessarily the norm across, you know, all position coaches. And so do you think there was naturally going to be this, you know, growing pains for everybody at every position group? Like, man, this guy doesn't, I don't connect with him the way, you know, I did with Rod Marinelli, who wanted me to look up historical figures, or Gary Brown, who took us to get barbecue and things like that. Right. Do you think that was naturally going to be something that was tough to get over? And do you think they have the capacity to get over it?
To answer, yes. And that's what anything, man, that's what that transition. A lot of these guys grew up with Gary Brown. A lot of these guys grew up with Rod Marinelli, with Jason Garrett, literally from pups. You're pups when you came into the league 4 or 5 years ago, and these men help raise you. So when you talk about a Zeke and a Gary Brown, that he was a pup, you know, and it was like, come on, pup, let's go. And I, and it was, he was there for all those moments. You know, he was there when Zeke was getting in trouble and hey, what's up? Are you good? You know what I'm saying? Forget football. Are you good? Right. And it's like Mark Colombo is like, yo, let's go get a couple beers. And these are pups, right? Zach and all, they were pups. And so you get a chance to grow with these guys. And naturally, when you look at let's look at the college perspective. Universities don't get five-star recruits, right? Texas isn't why someone goes to Texas. It's the coach that comes to there, right? It's the coach that comes, sits in his living room that he connects with, that just so happens to be at Texas. Mm-hmm. Now, yeah, Texas is a place that you want to go, but if the, you know, if the coaching vibe isn't there, I'm vibing over here at Alabama.
Yeah,
you see what I'm saying? And so all of these guys grew up. The guys that we're talking about, your Leighton Van Der Esch's, your Jalen's, and your Zach's, all these guys grew up with the guys that you were just naming in that old regime, and then it's over.
All right, so help me out with that, because I think Bobby knows exactly where I'm going to go.
Well, before that, real quick.
Into this season, though, Jesse, about guys that wanted to come to Dallas because of Coach McCarthy, and those are the same guys, Everson Griffin, that shipped out. What do you make of that?
Yeah, you know what? It happens, right? You think you want to come somewhere, and then you get there, and it's the grass isn't greener. It happens all across the league. You know, look up in Seattle. You know, they gave up a lot for what they got for Jamal Adams. And while they still have one of the worst defenses in the league, you have this one thought process in your mind where I want to go and I want to do this. And then you actually get there and it's not what you thought. And things look a little bit different. And there is a dynamic that people, Jane, you've been all around this league. And you've covered many locker rooms. There's a dynamic in Dallas that people just don't understand. And then you get here and it's like, oh no, this not this little cubbyhole that you are in Minnesota, right? This is everybody's talking about you now. And some people just can't handle that type of exposure, criticism, whatever it may be. And it doesn't work out sometimes.
Do you think that hurt this year a little bit? In other words, it felt like they brought in they were a lot more active in free agency. And I remember, you know, Bobby and I, we were working our hits. It was like, look at the Cowboys. They're so active in free agency. They're getting Dontari Poe, Gerald McCoy, Everson Griffin, Alden Smith. We hadn't seen them be that active with some of like the bigger name free agents. It had been, for the most part, kind of guys that had been journeymen in the league. Because those guys are so used to doing things elsewhere, do you think that made it ruined the pH balance in the locker room? Like, it got a little acidic because these guys weren't used to certain things. They were, you know, we even saw it with Michael Bennett a little bit last year. Not saying that Michael Bennett was bad for the team. I actually thought he was good for the team. I mean, he checked me one day in the locker room and I was like, respect. But because so many of those pups were homegrown and they were used to one way, do you think the Cowboys in the future need to be a little bit more careful about what they bring in? It's like, you know, in a fish tank, you can only bring certain fish, don't mix. And then they start killing off the other fish. And you know, what used to be like a very thriving fish tank and aquarium in your house is all of a sudden things are dying. I honestly feel like there was something off a little bit this year because of some of that.
How many arguments have you guys had on Twitter throughout the years when guys, like, especially with Dallas Cowboys fans, it's always get him. I'm like, yo, that just may not fit here. And people fail to realize just how important meshing guys and fitting guys together. And one of the things that is going to have to happen with this group is you're going to have to see some of those guys get weeded out. And that's the hard part about bringing veterans into your program. Veterans are set in their ways. Oh, veteran, especially if they've been somewhere else for a long amount of time and had success. Like Pro Bowls, All Pros, Super Bowls, and they weren't just like Jags on that team. They were actually key contributors. And then they come to a situation and it's like, do what? I am, you know who I am? And so now you're trying to, you have, I'm just going to use these names, right? You have Everson Griffin, who comes in from, right, Zim system, mm-hmm. up in Minnesota. And then you bring a guy like Dontari Poe, who we found out just whose heart wasn't even in it, who talked about him possibly retiring before, right? So now you got Everson Griffin, you got Dontari Poe, and now you have these other guys who built their names and their attitudes under Jason Garrett, and you have them all in the locker room, all trying to – because honestly, all the offensive guys have been here. Right? Yeah. All those guys have been here. It's all the defensive guys who you were trying to bring all these pieces in, and it's like, you know, well, who is the voice? We talked about when Michael Bennett came, it was like, wait, you've been here for a cup of coffee and you're leading the charge in the locker room now? But that's Michael Bennett. If you know Michael Bennett, I don't care what room Michael Bennett goes into, he's going to be an alpha dog. And he has no problem being a snippy alpha dog if he's been there 5 years or 5 minutes. And so you're bringing in all these different personalities with a new coach, and everybody's trying to figure this thing out, but everybody's trying to also plant their flag as if I'm the alpha male. Here's how I do it. Look at me. And the pH balance, you know, and you're absolutely right. It's off, because that is the danger of when you're building a team and when you don't have an off season, because all these things get weeded out in the off season. When you got OTAs and mini camps, you can look around and you can go, that don't smell too good. This ain't gelling the way I thought it would gel. But when you don't have OTAs, mini camps, guys being around, you can tell that thing ain't kind of meshing. And now you can make necessary changes before you go into training camp, or be looking for those pieces while you're in training camp when guys get let go, to kind of bring in to build your roster. It was, hey, listen, guys, here's what we got. Here's what we need. Let's go. And it was like, and it's why we looking at 3-9 right now.
And we make that point. We talk about where the Cowboys front office may have erred and where this coaching staff may have had their issues. And, you know, Lord knows we've talked a lot about where the players have their issues in terms of, you know, busting coverages and things like that. But to look at it a little more psychologically, I guess, when you look at, is there a possibility that there's a little bit of the step-parent dynamic here, that like we talk about, like, okay, here's, you're not my mom, you're not my position coach, you're not my person. How much of the onus needs to be on the players to have like receptive hearts to change? Like, dude, you can be upset about it all you want. This is your reality now, and you need to be willing to, you know, have a teachable heart with this new coaching staff.
We're talking about entitled spoiled athletes.
Mm-hmm. Right? There are plenty of them.
There's a whole lot of them. and that's my brotherhood, right? Mm-hmm. I come from that. We're talking about entitled spoiled athletes. By the way, who was able to get away with murder in the past? Who was able to loaf? Who was able to, we've heard it, play hero ball, to be out of alignment and assignment, and still show up on Sunday and get their starting job? So, this is the culture that was built prior to Mike McCarthy getting here. And then now when guys get here, what are you going to tell me, Bobby? I make $5 million a year. I make $8 million a year. I make $12, $15, $20 million a year, Bobby. Do what? Now, here's what I'm going to do. Because I know at the end of the day, if you let me go, I'll find another team. But boy, am I going to be a big hit on your cap. So you think these guys don't know that? You think agents don't? They know these things. And I've been in – I remember being in Cincinnati, and I won't name the player's name, but I remember a player telling a coach, I make $9 million. What the f*** they going to do to me? And that's the honest-to-God truth.
See – it's funny you say that. I won't name the names or the team, but I know a story in recent years where a player started to feel himself after they got paid, and there was an incident at practice. Coach sends them home, comes back the next day for treatment, think they're going to go back to practice. Coach calls them into the office, literally checks them, and reminds them that they make more money, they've spent more time, and they're not going anywhere. And the attitude of said player changed real quick. I don't think we've ever seen a coach do that in Dallas because they know they can go over the coach's head and go right to the principal's office. You know, one of those players, you and I, one of my favorite conversations that you had, I don't know if you remember, we were at, what is it, a front porch in Dallas?
I don't remember.
We went to a restaurant and I was fascinated just learning your backstory, which I want to get into when we talk about your charity that I didn't even know about, but about how you were roommates with Dez Bryant.
Yeah.
And obviously Dez and I have like become friends over the year. Bobby's got to know him. And there's a really endearing side to Dez, but there's also a side that can be very difficult, very emotional and coddled by that organization. Do you think Dez would have benefited from more tough love and not being able to go over the coach's head? Because as Jerry said it, he said he had a heart for Dez, but he was a pain in the ass.
Right. But that's you building an angry dog and upset that it bit you. Mm. You think Dez would have got away with that? You know Sean Payton really well. You think Dez would have done any of this under Sean Payton?
I'll be curious if Dez gets away with his Twitter tirade with John Harbaugh, because John's another one.
So I'll take you guys back. Was it Robert Meacham, Tennessee receiver? Mm. Mm-hmm. He was drafted in the first round by the Saints.
Yep.
And we were having a joint practice, New England and New Orleans in Foxborough. And Robert dropped it. And Sean Payton, this is your first round pick. This is the golden child. Sean Payton laid into Robert Meacham. And he was like, you think that bull is acceptable? I will ship your back to whatever the hell. I mean, this is your first round pick. And he laid into him to the point where it was like, I'm talking about screaming. We're in a live 1v1, and he is laying into Robert Meacham.
He's insane when he gets worked up, yes.
Right. And I'm saying, like, I've been in the locker room where I look at a guy like Gronk, right? When do we see Gronk's antics? In the offseason.
Mm-hmm.
We don't see him. We don't see him August to February. Why? Because Bill didn't play that. So there are certain guys who Bill lets you know day one, here's what it is. Sean lets you know day one, here's what it is. What a guy like Dez benefits from stern, strict discipline. That's when Dez is at his best. If you let Dez be Dez, you are now controlled by the roller coaster. So when Dez is good Dez, you have a great practice. When Dez decides to say F y'all, well, just know it's going to be F y'all for this whole day. And now you have to deal with that. So
you bring up something interesting there, and I just want to go into the psychology because, you know, a lot of us that cover this team and fans, we've got questions because we talked about it. It feels like the pH balance and whatnot's off. When you hear some of the comments the players have made this year, they've been a lot better about, you know, we don't have locker room access, so you don't get a lot out of them. It's on Zoom calls. But some of the things that they have said have been curious. And it's hard to really deep dive with some of these guys because Mike has told them not to talk to the media. Keep it in-house. But when you hear some of the stuff that started at the beginning of the year and what we heard today, are those guys that sound like they're respecting this coaching staff? Are we reading too much into it? I'm just curious.
No, I think I like to call it self-preservation. Mm. When everything starts to go bad, I got to start saying now, well, it ain't me.
Mm.
And I got to start kind of showing you, like, I'm giving you the cheese. I'm giving you these little cheese bits where I want you to go and follow that. And it's like, well, don't come look at me. Antoine Woods, for the life of me, I don't understand why he did this.
But are we talking the picture?
He posted a picture of I haven't got one of these, a triple team, since high school. You know what that said to me? That said to me, hey, now, It's the bums behind me that's not getting it done. It ain't me.
I'm eating up these blockers for the guys on the second level. What are you doing for me?
You can put all the ha 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 faces you want on that. To me, that says self-preservation. While the ship is sinking, I want y'all to know that this 300-yard performance that we gave up, well, look at here. I'm being triple teamed. And so it's these little things that everyone now is, because the losing is happening and it's happening at such a rapid pace and such a freaking bad pace, everyone's now is like kind of almost scrapping of saying, in cold word, it ain't me. Like, it's him. It's that. It's the scheme. It's everyone now is in self-preservation mode, trying to save themselves from this ship, this sinking ship, and there's not enough life rafts on this thing.
Can it be fixed? In other words, do you think that this group, given the challenge of this season and the whole, it's not me, it's them, it's not all of us, like look at the coach, can this team figure it out with this coach, or are we going to see more of the same next year?
Or is there going to be a next year? If they lose out and go 3-13, is there a next year for Mike McCarthy?
There has to be, right? Like,
if they lose the final four games the way they did against Washington, it's got to be bad. But if they lose the final four, like they get blown out by 20, including by the Bengals, who are that happens, might do it.
If they fire Mike McCarthy, that's egg on the face of Jerry Jones, because everybody's going to then say, well, you placated to the Rooney Rule by having a cup of coffee with Marvin Lewis, mm-hmm. and then you hired really the first guy that you talked to, a Mike McCarthy. So that's almost egg in the face on Jerry and Steven for, I guess, not doing their complete due diligence of looking at guys like Matt Rule and Lincoln Riley and so on and so forth. So I this is 2020, so anything's liable to happen. I highly doubt that they fire Mike McCarthy. I think there needs to be an overhaul of guys. You gotta, as a coach, you're already seeing that.
Can they afford it though, Jesse? I mean, we're talking about trying to get Dak signed. You've got what, 13 guys on IR, Bobby?
The cap,
eight of them were starters.
The cap likely going down a little bit next year.
The problem is clearly defense.
Right.
How does Mike Nolan survive? I know that is Mike's guy. I feel like Mike has been in defense of him despite his own players. I just wonder if Mike survives.
Hasn't Mike McCarthy been around the league long enough, though? I mean, he seems pretty, like, we hear so many no-nonsense answers from him, like, when your report came out and he said, you know what, these are the things that happen when you have losing football. I think Mike McCarthy's been around long enough that if the Joneses come in and say, dude, Mike Nolan's got to go, I think he kind of goes, man, that's the price of being as bad as we were. I get it. I'm not happy, but I get it.
I said this, and I said this jokingly, but I was dead serious. Mike, and I'm not defending Mike McCarthy. Mike did what a lot of us would do. I would do. You would do, right? Is I got into a position of power. I hooked my homie up.
Totally. Right? I'm faulting for it.
Coaches around the NFL have done that for years and years and years.
All of them do it.
Yes.
Now, the thing is my like, it's like, you recommend someone for a job, and Jane, you and I, we've had several conversations. It's like, Jess, if I told you to go there at 8 o'clock and you showed up at 10, dude, I'm never putting my name on the line for you again. And it's like, you're my homie and I want to see you thrive. But if you can't do your part, then hell, I'm not doing anything anymore. He hired the homie and the homie didn't work out. Mm-hmm. And this is collateral damage. And hey, listen, you showed me a favor way back when, I repaid it, but here's where we're at. I gotta let you go for my sake. And that's why I think Mike Nolan is gone. And I think I would not be surprised, Bobby, to your point, if the next two games are lost, that they just cut ties right then and there and begin to start looking for, because now what you don't want to do is what we saw, kind of, you know, hold on to guys, and now you're playing this dance about, you know, because if other candidates see that you still hold on to Mike, they're going elsewhere. So I think you cut ties, and now you start seeing all those candidates who want a defensive coordinator job, who are actually qualified to do so, They start poking their head out now. They're looking around. They're like, all right, hey, let me send my resume. Let me make my phone calls. And then that way, that also sends a message to, here's, you have to get a jump of what you're going to offseason going to be like. Because we don't know what the, there's, I mean, the way COVID is spiking, we don't know what the offseason is going to be like. So if you're going to change coaches, you it's best that you do it now or as soon as possible so that, one, the new guy that you do bring in, there can be a collaboration of what scheme are we running, what players do we want, so that we can go out and get those guys, whether it's via draft or via free agency. You got to act on that now because you can't have what you had. Mike won't survive another year like this.
What? I got a crazy, like, I just want to bring this subject. You promoted Kellen Moore, who is literally, what, 3 years removed from the league, and you moved him up. You believed in him. He could do it. Why not move Sean Lee up? If there's any guy, like, when I look at the pregame hype, when I see guys holding people accountable, there was no one more livid about my report than Sean Lee. Mm-hmm. No one more livid that came out was livid because he is such a football guy. Mm-hmm. We know he watches countless amounts of tape. Why not?
Well, I'm with you. Well,
am I crazy to just say, like, why not?
And to that point, I know I've told you, Jane, this probably, I don't think I've said it on the podcast yet, but I recently asked dozens and dozens and dozens of people around the league. Jesse, you were one I asked. I asked a ton of people just in general who have been around the league, who've spent time around the league, like, who is the most intelligent football mind you've ever come across? And the most common answer I got, and it wasn't just from players and teammates, it was from a lot of different types of people. The most common answer I got was Sean Lee, which was surprising to me. I didn't totally expect that, but there was one person had told me, said, it's Sean Lee because he literally knows everybody's responsibility at everybody's position group on offense and defense. He knows everybody. He knows what everybody's supposed to be doing.
Sean's obsession with, like, knowledge of football, like, you hear the term first guy in, last guy to leave. If there was a poster child for that, it would be comb over, slick back hair, Sean Lee. Like he is the poster child of that type of situation.
And they respect him.
Right.
You know, I won't tell you who I talked to, but I'm going to read a text as we talk about this Mike Nolan defense. And I'd gotten some calls from other coaches in the league about him and how they were shocked that Jerry didn't do his homework more on him. But when I asked, I said, what did you think about the defense as related to the Ravens? Someone that studies a lot of tape and a lot of people respect. They played a lot of different fronts, nickel, bear, 4-3. On the Lamar touchdown, they played straight man on four receivers with no safety. So when Lamar creased them, they had no one to stop him from hitting his head on the goalpost. They ran the exact same play a little later and Dobbins went for 30. The ends were standing up sometimes so they could see better when what Lamar and the action was doing. Yikes. Specifically, when they talked about Matt Rhule, they said Matt Rhule's team message to everyone via Zoom at the very beginning of the season was so motivating. He was the son of a New York City preacher who ran homeless shelters. He can communicate with anyone. Mm-hmm. So we talk about what the Cowboys have and what they're missing. I'm just reading you someone that watches a lot of tape, knows a lot of people. That was their feedback.
Yeah, but you have to remember, unlike Matt Rhule, literally a year ago, how do you have success as a college head coach? Recruiting.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I have to be up on the latest trends and lingo and, hell, even some of the music. And my...
Don't forget that living room manner. Went over mom and dad.
And that's the thing, is that now all I do is I go from five-star recruit, three-star recruit, and I have nothing but my mouth that I have to. And think about how many reps that Matt Rhule has gotten from Temple to Baylor to everywhere.
Came into Baylor following one of the nastiest scandals in football and got them to win. So if you wanted to talk about a guy, now granted Baylor's in Waco, that spotlight was so on that team and it seemed like he handled it. And from the people I've talked to, they never really even interviewed him. And as one person in the league told me, they said, Jane, that Cowboys job is a young man's job. It's for a young man. It asked me for someone who's hungry, who is innovative, who can relate to the guys, and that the guys are going to respect. And one of these people that I talked to in the league said, it's not a job that I'd want. I don't have the stomach for that. And when we talk about Mike McCarthy, who's been out a year, he needed football as much as football needed him. He came in, he said he'd learned all these new tricks. He learned analytics. When things go wrong, it's because the analytics say that. I just, not that I think that he's hot trash and Mike's not the guy. I think Mike can still coach. I think he's a good head coach. I think he could be that. I just don't know if it's in Dallas with everything that comes with this job. Think about it. Jason was young when he got the job.
Right.
Not incredibly relatable, but he was hungry.
I'll give you this example. And I think what you're saying has so much validity to it about it being, I think football in general, I think sports in general is becoming a young man's game now. Mm-hmm. But Andy Reid thrives.
Oh. Right.
Pete Carroll is the oldest man in football.
But he vibes with his guys, you know?
But look at his assistants, right? He gets assisted. And I think that's something that you have to also look at. You can be an older, maybe even a little bit out of a touch guy. Who are you surrounding yourself with? Are you surrounding yourself? Because why? We hinted on it earlier. What is so important to these players? The guy they sit in a meeting room with every single day. How is Nick Saban able to still go out here and get – because well, the program helps, but he's able to have guys around him that these other players relate to. So I think for Mike, one of the biggest things I think Mike did early in his Cowboys career was he buckled to the Kellen Moore thing. Because to me, while I was standing on the table for Mike McCarthy, I wanted his play calling. I wanted that part of Mike McCarthy. And I think when you kind of almost, and I don't know, I wasn't in those meetings, but if you were kind of fiending to get a job, sometimes you say yes to anything. Yeah, I want the job. And I'll let Kellen Moore be the offensive play caller. And I think that's took away some of who he is. And we ask sometimes about the game man, this and this and that. When you take those things away from him, it throws off his coaching pH balance. Because it's such a routine of, okay, I know what I'm doing. I'm here. And now sometimes you find yourself, because I'm not calling plays, I'm not fully involved, like kind of in the offense, you know, so to speak. I can find myself wandering, looking for things to do on game day. Well, let me go over here and yell at someone. Let me, because I'm not locked in. Like when you call them plays, when you're a play caller, you're locked into everything. Time,
didn't we kill
distance.
Garrett for that? Remember, he was the walkabout coach.
Yeah,
we killed him for it, but at least what Garrett did well was he got guys to buy in.
But and Garrett was point, a horrible game manager.
But agreed. But to your point, he got guys to buy in and motivate them in a way that they at least respected them. That's what I feel is like missing with Mike a little bit, is like there's like this lack of respect, and maybe that is because of COVID. I don't know what it is.
It's losing.
Or maybe it's because he's riding so hard for his homie that people are having a hard time with that.
It's losing, Jane. It's losing. It's losing.
Winning cures everything.
I'm curious. You mentioning that part about, you know, when you take away part of his routine, then maybe he's kind of stuck looking around, looking for something to do on game day. I saw something, and this was not discussed. I mean, there was only a handful of people, I think, who saw it at the time. But ahead of the Pittsburgh game, was the one where Zeke was questionable, I think. But ahead of the Pittsburgh game, Mike McCarthy, I've never seen a head coach do this at all. 3 hours before kickoff, he came out and stood by the tunnel, and he stood there for a full hour. And he talked to a Pittsburgh assistant coach for about a half hour, but then there was another half hour where he just sat there waiting for Zeke to come out to warm up. And I just remember being struck by it. Like, I never saw Garrett until 30 minutes before kickoff out on the field. I don't typically see head coaches until 30, 45 minutes before kickoff, and they come out with the whole group. And it just was odd to me. I was like, man, 3 hours before kickoff, and the head coach is literally spending a full hour just sitting outside on the field and sometimes talking to people, sometimes just sitting there waiting. And I thought it was a little bit odd. Do you think that's furthering that thought that, like, he's a little bit kind of lost without what he normally does, which is the play calling?
This is what he's always done. Like, think of, like, his entire career when he came in the league, he came in like that, being involved in doing something. And then once you become that play caller, like, and I keep referencing going back to Sean Payton because I know that you have a relationship there and you've been around Sean. Like, 3 hours before the game, Sean is still kind of like, you know, still finalizing some things for the offense, right? You know, who's up, who's down. All right, you know what? I slept on this last night. We're going to do this in the first 15 plays. Oh. You know,
he'll put in red zone stuff on Saturday nights at 2 o'clock in the morning. He's told me before, and I'm like, that's insane. but it helps when you've got a quarterback that you finish each other's sentences. It's easy for that guy to be like, oh yeah, I've seen that before. That worked for me. Let's add that to the, you know, the play sheet. So,
but I mean, you're able to do that, but his mind is still thinking about how can I perfect whatever game plan that we have? How can I add another wrinkle? How can I add another opportunity for us to have success? So you're always involved in something.
You're engaged.
You're engaged. But Mike's just, he's just there. And I think that, I think a part of that is it eats away at you a little bit. And now you find yourself just wandering, trying to find something to do. Because they said when the PAT, when they got the delay of game, mm-hmm. they're like, "What was he doing?" He was talking to Fosso. It's like,
right?
You just finding stuff to do. It's like, you know. But again,
I hadn't thought about that. That is an interesting. You're one of the smartest guys that I've talked to. Like I said, we had that one sit down one day, and I was like, "That was some fascinating stuff." That is an interesting theory. That's why I love the show. I always tell our fans and our listeners, it's cathartic. We're sort of all talking through it. Since we're not able to fully connect with these guys, I certainly haven't heard from my guys since the report. But I think it's interesting to sort of talk through some of these things, but that makes a lot of sense. And to be clear, I'm not the president of the Fire Mike McCarthy fan club. Like, I like Mike. Mike, when I'd see him at Combine, was always personable. I was excited when he was coming here. I think a lot of people think, like, I fly my flag for Jason. I don't fly my flag for Jason. Jason and I had our differences. He once told me, I said, "Do you not like me?" He said, "We just do things differently." And I never quite understood what that meant. But I always respected him, and I respected the way guys played for him. And he allowed his guys, in my opinion, to be who they were. I mean, he allowed Dez, it would drive him nuts, but he allowed DeMarcus to say what he wanted. He allowed Dez to say what he wanted. When I think about some of these other programs, they allow these guys to say what they want, like, be you. But I feel like this, it's like they've come in and, like, put a cap on these guys. And I don't know. It's just so hard to evaluate Mike given COVID. So
right.
I like to talk these things through with you because I think you are a smart guy. And so that's my, like, long-winded way of saying, like, that's really interesting.
I want to – and, Jane, I think I brought this up early in the season. You shot it down. But I'm going to bring it up again because a lot has changed. And Jesse, I want you to, I'm going to throw out one of my world famous tinfoil hat questions. Now, I know he got a lot of money above market value, but should it have been more of a red flag to people that Randall Cobb said, "I'd rather go to Houston than play for Mike McCarthy again"? Especially when he had such a good relationship with Dak and had put together a strong season. Don't you think that if he was as genuinely, like, tight with Mike McCarthy as the Cowboys wanted him to be, don't you think he would have said, like, "I can take a bit of a discount to come back here"?
But it was significant amount of money. So this is what I would say, Jay. This was my argument to Jesse. It was a significant amount of money that was more. They were on their second kid. And I don't know how long Randall's going to be playing. He might have been thinking to himself, yes, his wife's a bad chick and she, like, makes a lot of money as an attorney when she decides that she wants to go back to work and do it full time. She's incredibly smart. I have, like, a girl crush on her. But maybe he wanted to be more featured in an offense. I mean, I think it's an interesting theory, Bobby.
He got a lot of play last year. I mean, if penalties don't take away a couple of big catches for him, he had a couple of really unfortunate, like, illegal, you know, procedure or whatever. Like, somebody had an illegal shift on, like, an 80-yard touchdown he scored. I mean, I think he's close to, like, 1,000 yards and 7-8 touchdowns last year. I mean, he put up good numbers, and CeeDee Lamb's putting up good numbers. He'd be in that spot in theory. And so just it made me wonder that, you know, he showed up to that press conference when they introduced Mike, and, you know, he had a lot of great things to say. I don't think there was anybody who disliked Randall Cobb. I think he got along pretty well with everybody inside the locker room. I think there was a strong connection for him here. And so it was just
he loved Dallas.
I just wondered. I know I'm just being a little tinfoil hat. Is it odd that he said, "I'll go to Houston instead. I'll go play for Bill O'Brien, who's got a terrible reputation"?
love Bill.
Okay, but I'm just saying, terrible reputation elsewhere.
When you start talking about guys who are at the end of their career, it's kind of almost, let me store up as much of this bag as I can before I hit the road. I'm just being honest with you. And it's like Randall had a Super Bowl, if I'm not correct, right? So he has a Super Bowl.
I think so.
2010,
yep. Yeah. So it was his rookie year, yep.
So he has a Super Bowl, right? He had his moment in time when he was a Pro Bowler. And now for him is, I don't have anything else to prove. I'm trying to get all I can in my nest egg. And, you know, I love Dallas. I'm only going 45 south. So I'm a 45-minute southwest plane ride away from, if my wife and kids wanted to stay here, I can literally, if I wanted to be fancy smancy, I can literally take a flight in the morning to practice and come home for dinner if I wanted to. I don't think that was a kind of a red flag. I just think of a player who's kind of seeing the writing on the wall, knowing his career is going, it's coming to an end pretty soon, and saw an opportunity to make a couple more million dollars in a state that doesn't have any state tax, and he jumped on it.
It was like $2.5 million extra dollars.
No, I know. It was a ton. Like I said, I'm not saying that's even the case. I was just throwing out a theory. I was curious if the theory was extra, right?
Wasn't it like $4 million?
I mean, yeah, he got like $9 million annually, Dallas wasn't going to give him more than five or six, probably. But
yeah,
it's more just like, okay, let's cobble together enough information here. I think we see Randall Cobb leaving, right? Mm-hmm. Everson Griffin coming in here, like, drawn in by Mike McCarthy less than 2 months later, came in here as a willing, like, I'm buying in, probably more than other people were because he chose to come here. And then within 2 months was like, okay, I went out of here. And then you look at things like, who was the most consistent last year in the locker room, Jane, insisting that it was the player's fault what was happening on the field and not the coaching staff? You remember who it was?
Cobb?
Jalen Smith. Jalen consistently said, these are day of mistakes on us. This is nothing about our preparation. Consistently said that. And now this year, there's been like two or three instances of like, are you throwing the coaching staff under the... It just seems like there are these little... Like when you cobble them together, you might be able to like say, okay, well, look, you know, there was a bang heard from the grassy knoll and somebody saw, you know, something over here and back and to the left and Randall Cobb left for Houston.
See, Jesse, this is why I agree that the reason why I even put the report out is because I believe it's not all coaching. I believe it's not all players. And so the players just kept getting trash. My point was there's another piece to the puzzle. In other words, coaches do have to put their players in a position to succeed. And I think heading into the season, we heard that this defense was going to be exotic. It was going to be multiple. And it's been so exotic. They're on an island and there's no lifeboats for them. And they're so multiple. I just read you the list earlier of like what fronts they're playing. I think it's a lot for this group to digest. And to your point, in a COVID season, when they haven't built up the trust in this new coaching staff that they need to do certain things, like somebody brought up to me, why is DeMarcus Lawrence in a 2-point stance? It's disingenuous to his skill set. Why do you have two linebackers out there against a running quarterback instead of three? And so I think that while Mike keeps saying they need to trust the process, do things that aren't comfortable for them, it's hard for guys to trust the process, do things that aren't comfortable for them when they haven't had the opportunity to really be taught the scheme, the opportunity to buy in. And as a result, we see them improvising and abandoning and going back to what they know because they, to your point, have some of these egos and they're getting tired of being called trash. And then when they do that, they get exposed. I think it's not that complicated. I think that's what's going on here. That's just my sense.
No, you're definitely driving down the right road. And it's a complicated mix because they're both at fault. One thing I know about coaches, especially those who've been around this league a very long time, they're stubborn. Mm-hmm. They're stubborn. It's this is my system. This is what I know. I hang my hat on it. I've had success with it. If I just keep banging this square into this round hole, it's gonna fit. And it's hard for them to come off of that because, to be honest with you, this is what I know. And when you routinely get jobs over and over and over and over and over again, it doesn't force you to change. You're allowed to stay the same. So now you have a coach who has a system and wants to do it a certain way, and you have players who were taught a different system and a different way of learning. Because again, we said earlier, these pups were groomed and grew up in a different system. So everything about their off-season training, their weight training, everything was grooming them to do something different. And then the change happens. And again, you have no off-season to allow that that preparation and acceleration to learning the new on both, on players learning systems, system learning players, and it meshing. And then now you try to bring it together. And you're trying to get these two things to work, and sometimes you get it to work, and you'll see, well, that was a bad scheme fit right there. And then you'll see things like we saw the other night, and Leighton even said it. He goes, I'm supposed to be in the front side A gap. And you watch the film, and you're saying, Leighton, you were going to the front side A gap, and then all of a sudden, for whatever reasons.
He told us, he said, I second-guessed myself.
But why?
I think it goes back to my point. He sort of questions if that's the right call.
But see, this
and then DeMarcus Lawrence, we've got to play this clip, Bobby, because he cut me off mid-sentence.
I heard that clip.
And it's like he wanted to walk us through, this is how, I don't want to read into, because I haven't followed up with DeMarcus because I can't.
Right.
It was almost like he wanted to explain, well, I got to do this, 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 and this, and he's got to do this, 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 and this. So yeah, he might second guess himself. Yeah, I might be rushing up field, but these are things you guys aren't seeing. And I was like, that's interesting.
Can I play the conservative end, which is not normally my play, is to err on the side of caution and say, and think, you know, the warmest, fuzziest feelings. My read when hearing DeMarcus answer that didn't, because I know this was a debate by some people on social media. Brian Broaddus had mentioned he thought it was this way, that it sounded like you're questioning all the things the coaching staff is having you do. My read on it was, when I heard DeMarcus Lawrence say that, I think DeMarcus Lawrence was saying, when any coaching staff is playing against the triple option, you've got a ton of responsibilities. And so I think it was more, he was talking about the responsibilities versus the opponent rather than the responsibilities the coaching staffs were putting on him. That's just, it's triple option football and you're asked to do a lot of stuff.
But my thing, when you're talking about like things like triple option, like, yes, a lot of different things can happen, but your responsibilities are your responsibilities.
Yeah, and I mean, to be fair, they were playing it right at the start of the snap and Leighton abandoned it. So they were.
That's what I'm saying.
Then you had Stephen Jones, who said, you got a lot of the same personnel this year that have just been inefficient against the run. So, Bobby, you're my football savant here. Can you think of any game last year or the year before where they played a triple option quarterback and were able to actually get it done? Similar players?
No, I mean they've gone against mobile quarterbacks. They haven't really gone against a team that runs the ball the way Baltimore does. But I mean, also to be fair, Steven said when he talked to the fan this week, said that it wasn't just Baltimore, that this is a consistent issue all year against the run game. I mean, you've got three of the 11 worst rushing defense performances by the Cowboys in franchise history have been this year. Right. And so, I mean, there's a lot there that, you know, is hard to explain.
But do players just digress that quick in a season? So my point is, where I'm going with this, Jesse, is we are seeing a lot of similar personnel out there, specifically against the run game. Do players just go down the drain, that many players go down the drain that quick in one season because of COVID? Because we're not seeing that with other teams. So what I'm getting at is, going back to the argument that I made earlier, I think it's a combination of both.
Well, and Jane,
so why not just simplify this thing, which Mike Nolan got a little testy with when I asked earlier in the season, well, we have simplified it. We have blah, blah, blah. Whatever you're doing is not working. So get through the four games and scheme this thing up to the skill set of these players, and then next year try and reinvent the wheel.
And that was the exact point Chris Richard made when we talked to him recently, was Chris had said that for all the talk about we weren't disguising things and we weren't doing this and that, he said there is a concept in football called ability alignment, and that is you align and you put your players in position to where their ability will allow them to make the play. And so there are certain things you can't ask them to do. And so I wonder if that's kind of what's at play here, is Mike Nolan thought that these players were more capable of things within his scheme than they were, and he's learning quickly they can't do the things that I need them to do.
Yeah, but I go back to, you brought up Chris Richard, and Chris Richard simply said, yeah, we simplified it last year and we didn't get it done.
Yeah.
So that tells you as well, well, a coach sit here and told you we simplified it, and yet we still were bad. We still were bad in run defense last year. So this isn't a new thing. So whether you simplify it or whether you complicate it, the results have been the same. Because at some point in time, Rod Marinelli and Chris Richard begin to just simply say, here's what we're going to do, and you have to be able to do it.
Well, if it is the players, you got to give the coaching staff credit for masking some of these deficiencies if they were historically this bad as a personnel group.
I mean,
and there is a lot of injuries too, obviously.
Yeah, but still, like, come on. Like, there's certain things where if you can't get off a block, I don't care how I scheme it up.
Right.
If you can't get off a block at this level, I don't care what I do. And we've seen a lot of that. If you can't stay in front of a guy in coverage, I don't care what I do. If there's certain things where you're just saying, well, what else do you want me to do? Like, hey, guy, listen, the guard's going to come off on you. Like, that's football 101. Now, if you can't and get rid of him and get to where you're supposed to get to, then what? Then hell, I'm handicapped now.
Jesse,
is out there, and I'm not a tape girl. But when you watch it, I remember we were in the press box, Bobby, and I was like, "What was that?" Like the utter confusion.
I've said that a lot.
As they're getting lined up, and it's just so obvious, like nuances that guys like Baldy would do on breakdowns, stuff that I wouldn't normally pick up on. Literally, I'm seeing them line up, and it was when it was a home game. Jalen was calling the plays when Leighton was at. And he was legitimately confused out there. It was wild.
It's Jesse, to that point, when you just doing this, that reminded me to ask, when you're showing the push-pull technique and things like that, that's probably, I think, schematically one of the larger differences this year, is that Jim Tom Sula's more, you know, two-gapping and, you know, push-pull, and it's a physical, like, shed and things like that, whereas Rod Marinelli was all about guys getting upfield. And the defensive line getting upfield. Is that potentially where most of this run game bleeding out with similar personnel is happening? Is because the defensive line is asking to run a scheme that they are not skilled at, that they can't.
Last year we gave up bad numbers last year running the ball against us.
Not quite this bad. It was bad. It was bad against Minnesota. Dalvin Cook ran all over him. That was a bad game. Right.
Dalvin Cook runs all over everyone.
And their big issue last year, honestly, was quarterback scrambling. Trubisky and Driscoll and other guys who were no names were picking up 60 yards rushing a game on you. And that was, I talked to some people who said that they thought that was a function of Rod Marinelli's scheme, because defensive line were getting up field right. So quickly, and then there were just these lanes for quarterbacks to go.
This is the simple yet complex thing that we have in the NFL is film. Mm-hmm. Is that guys use all off season, because all you had to do was watch film. You couldn't go anywhere. You couldn't do anything. So you just start watching film and watching film and watching film and saying, he can't do this. He can't do this. And so now what you see is you see a lot of things being schemed offensively to put those players in a position to have to now go to the weakest part of their game.
Yep.
And that's something that a lot of people are not talking about. Like, yeah, you can say scheme isn't. There's some other cats on the other side that they pay a bunch of money to who watch in film, and they're like, oh, we're going to motion here, motion here, get this, and we get the look that we want.
Easy money.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like, that's just, you got to give credit to the other guy on the other side of the ball as well. That is the essence of what football is. It's, I'm going to try to figure out a way to highlight and make you play with your weak points. Yeah, I'm not going to, hey, guess what, guys? I'm not going to let Jalen Smith just run downhill on us. He's going to win more often than he loses. What I am going to make Jalen do is play side to side. And we'll take our chances. Yeah, he may get us one time, but we may gash him for 37. We may gash him for 40. Hey, here's what I'm going to do Hey, listen, DeMarcus Lawrence is a great player. Here's what we're going to do. I'm going to let him fly up the field, and we're going to come right underneath them. So there's certain things that they're looking at and they're saying, okay, here's where they're good. Hey, we're going to make these guys have to cover. Don't worry about it. I'm going to motion this guy inside. He's going to take the eye candy and I'm going to have a guy go across the middle. There's other guys on the other side of the ball who get paid a boatload of money to figure these things out. And the personnel doesn't change. Jalen couldn't move side to side last year. Can't move side to side this year, right? Leighton, he had his struggles in certain things, getting off blocks and shedding blocks. That ain't changed this year because he spent most of the offseason recovering from neck surgery. So, again, they're seeing these things, and they're saying, here's what we got to do, fellas. And they're executing it. And they're saying, you may stop us once. You may even stop us twice. And once Dak went out early in the season, there was nothing that said that I have to be in a hurry.
Yep.
Because I'm not worried about them scoring. So I can take my time and let this thing play out and then eventually crack it. Before, you know, when you have such a good quarterback or a prolific offense or someone who you are threatened, it makes you think differently. But now it's like, oh, we'll punt because they're going to punt it back to us. And then we'll try it again. And if it doesn't work,
wear them down.
We'll punt again. And then we'll either, you know, let them make a mistake and they'll punt it back to us. And then we'll crack it because we've seen it two or three times. We make in-game adjustments and now we go ahead and do it. Because a lot of times in NFL games, it's not that you beat me for 60, 70 plays. No, you found about five or six of them that you really won. And that's the outcome of the game.
Except that, this year it's 60, 70 plays they're getting.
Yeah, this year.
Yeah, there's been a few 60, 70 play games they've lost, yeah.
But you know, you see what I'm saying? So yeah. It's like this is what these guys see, and there's no coaches and offensive coordinators are saying, we don't have to rush this stuff. We're going to get the look that we want because they're only scoring 16 points a game. When Dak was playing, they were scoring 30-plus. Mm-hmm. So that puts an onus on it. You know what? Hey, if we do punt them the ball – the likelihood of four and the rest of those guys making a play is significant. Now, whether you got Andy or Garrett, Gilbert, whoever, offensive coordinator, they say, all right, we'll punt. Okay, even if they do score, I like my chances that they can't do that three more times. And they've been right. And so they just keep plugging away at what they want to do and say, well, they'll give us the ball back. And then we'll do it again, and then we'll crack one, and then we'll get up 10, 14 points, and they can't come back from that because they don't have the offensive output to do so.
It's depressing to talk about. You know, sometimes when Bobby and I talk about doing this podcast, some people have said, you know, we've been sporadic and they haven't been as regular. It's like, what do you want us to talk about? I feel like it's like a broken record at this point. What's not a broken record, though, Jesse, before we let you go, is your bleeding heart for those that aren't as fortunate as us. This time of year, we always get the text from you that reminds us to give and give generously.
Begging for your money,
baby. I love it. You are shameless about it, and I'm okay with it. Tell the listeners and the viewers that are watching on YouTube what you're about this time of year and how they can help.
Yeah, you know, and a quick backstory of me. I'm middle of three boys, born and raised in Roselle, New Jersey. Mother drug addict, father drug dealer, raised by my grandmother who made less than $35,000 a year. And so trying to feed three growing boys on a salary that, you know, that's tough. And there were a lot of times we didn't have much. And this time of the year were times where, you know, grandma had to make a decision. Was it, you know, I like to say we had more month than money and more bills than bucks. Mm-hmm. And so she has to make a decision. Do I wrap gifts and put them under the tree, or do I put food in their bellies? You know what I'm saying? Do I keep the heat on in the wintertime in New Jersey? Right. And so those are the decisions that a lot of people like my grandmother have to make. And the thing is, here I am, young Jesse Holly, is thinking, man, I want to be able to go back to school and say I got a Christmas gift. I want to be able to go outside on the block and play with a Christmas gift. I want to be able to come down on December 25th and say I have a gift under the tree. And as a kid, I don't understand that grandma has to balance this thing out. And I always remember just thinking, man, I just wish someone, you see the commercials, you're like, man, why someone doesn't come help us? I would love some help, you know, for us. And some days it's like, you know, hey, this year we're just going to get Long Johns. He's going to get socks this year. Sorry, you're not going to be able to get the thing that you saw in the Toys R Us circular. Yeah, I'm that old. The Toys R Us circular. And I remember we were coming from an away game against Miami, and I kind of had one of those moments where I felt unfulfilled. Like, Jess, you're living, but you're not changing. You're just here. And I remember doing like a self-assessment. I looked at myself up and down, literally looked at myself up and down. I remember I had $300 sneakers on, $250 jeans, $300 belt, $100 shirt. And I'm just like, I had $1,000 worth of clothes on. And I just felt like, what are you doing? Like, who are you? What are you doing? And I'm not saying that you can't have nice stuff. I worked hard, but it was like, you could do more. And that's where Holly's Helping Hands kind of came into to play. And I love Christmas. This is like Christmas matches my personality. I'm a giver by nature. I'm a joyful person by nature, unless you piss me off, and then I'm not. I'm a Grinch. But it just the spirit of Christmas makes me happy. And when I think about Christmas, I think about little Jesse. And I think about there's some kid who will get up on December 25th and have nothing. I said, help. Do something to change the world. Do something to make someone feel good. And so we started Holly's Helping Hands. And for like 10 plus years now, I find families in the DFW area who are in need. And we try to give them a Christmas of a lifetime. Not just a good Christmas, but a Christmas of a lifetime. Because it's just something. And most kids don't understand the fullness of what Christmas is. They think about Christmas as being, you know, a gift. And normally what we would do is we would have these families who didn't know each other, completely strangers. And there's something unique and special, and I'm not ashamed of my belief. I'm a follower of Jesus Christ. But there's stories all through the Bible where it talks about how God wanted to break bread, right? He wanted to sit down and eat with you. That mm-hmm. meant something for him to sit down and break bread with you. And I bring these families around from all around, and they come together, and we cater a dinner at Dave and Buster's, and we would come and we would break bread. They didn't know him from Adam. They didn't know him from Eve, but we all come together. And for those couple of hours, we were all family. No matter where you came from, no matter what your situation was, no matter if you were black, white, Hispanic, blue, purple, from Mars or from Venus, we sat together and we ate and we enjoyed each other's company. And you shared stories. And I would always tell, when I got a chance to speak, I would always tell them, I remind them, I sat in your seats. I get it. I understand it. Trust me. I said, but one of the things that my grandmother would always tell me about was legacy. Mm. And I would tell them, you will never get a chance to meet Yvonne Holly. That's where the why comes from in my email.
I had to ask Jesse, yeah, because his Holly email has a Y in it. And I was like, is that a typo? Do you mean to hit a J? Did you just get close to the keyboard?
That email is kind of the last thing that it used to be my grandmother's email. Mm. And it's the last thing that I have from her. So that's, I kept it. And so I still use that as a reminder of her. So the Y is for Yvonne. That's my grandmother's email that I've had for since she passed away. But I always tell them, I go, you'll never meet Yvonne Holly, but you'll reap the benefits of her. Mm. And I want 20 years from now, people may not never know who Mr. Fourth and Long is or who Jesse Holly is, but will reap the benefits of it. Because some kid was at Holly's Helping Hands, and you know, now when they're in a position, they'll go, I remember when I was 10 and this guy came and helped us, and now I want to do that for someone else. And the stories that we have are remarkable. You know, there some are sad. I'll give you kind of both on the spectrum. I'm an athletic director now, right? I'm living a pretty decent, good life. I don't have any complaints. I'm at a championship volleyball game, right? Our girls are at a volleyball game in the championship. And I'm walking in the gym, and there's a group of volleyball girls walking in. And one girl is like staring at me. This is pre-mask. You know, all that kind of stuff. And I'm looking at her like, why is she staring at me? But in my mind, I'm thinking, maybe she thinks she recognizes me from whatever. And she goes, she walks by me, and then she comes back. She says, I know you. And I'm like, me? She's like, I know you. And I'm like, I'm sorry, sweetheart. I don't. She goes, you're the guy. You're the guy from the Christmas thing. Mm. And I said, what? She said, my grandmother and my sister, we were at your Christmas thing 2 years ago. And I was like, oh my goodness. And she was like, I knew your face. You helped us out 2 years ago. My grandmother, she was raising us and you helped us out. I knew I remembered your face. And here it is. I'm like, wow. You know, she remembered that moment. She didn't know me because I caught a touchdown pass or didn't catch a touchdown pass. I got run out of the 1 yard line or whatever you want to call it. Or for what I did in college, she remembered you're the guy from the Christmas thing. And then another situation where we had a 16-year-old girl last year. Her name's Ariel. Ariel has brain cancer. Ariel won't see 18 years old. She won't. And there are certain things that she couldn't do because her mom and her dad couldn't do Christmas because they spent all of their money in traveling expenses and hotel stays to do her chemo and try to find different ways to give her a better chance at life and a miracle from brain cancer. It's just like, they're like, listen, all we can do now is keep her comfortable. Mm-hmm. So they spent all their money in treatment and doctor bills and hospital stays and all the kind of stuff going across the country trying to save their baby. And because of the gracious donations that people have given me, I was able to give them a Christmas last year. And the girl was so sweet. There's a picture, and I'll post it on Twitter. There's a picture of we're pinky promising, right? I'm still like, I will pinky promise you. Like, that means a lot to me. I will pinky promise you. And we pinky promised. And I said, as long as you keep fighting, I'm going to fight with you. Like, I'm going to fight to the very end with you. And I still call and I check up on her, you know, and I have a shirt, Ariel's Warrior, because we're just fighting with Ariel, you know? And so those are the things that we deal with. I had a kid 4 or 5 years ago. His grandmother came and she said, all he wants to do is play basketball. That's all he wants to do. The time that he wakes up to the time, he's bouncing, bouncing, bouncing. But the park is a little bit ways away and he always wants a bike to go to the park. Well, that year we got him a bike and a brand new basketball. Mm. And I hope this doesn't make me cry. But that Christmas, we get him a bike and a basketball. And that spring, I get a call from a pastor. And he said, your name's on the program. I said, what are you talking about? He says, I'm doing a service today for a kid that got hit by a car and passed away. And I saw your name on the program. And he screenshotted me the name of the program. And it was his lasting memories. One of his lasting memories was spending Christmas with Jesse Holly. Mm. And that was his last Christmas. And, you know, and so those type of things that I live with every single day, but there's so many faces, you know, the young people faces that look and they're just so happy. So that's my story. And this is why I do it every single year. And I'll do it as long as I possibly can, because it's not about me. It's about those kids. And I want my legacy not to be that I was a Dallas Cowboy. I want my legacy to be what my grandmother's legacy was, that I was a good person. Because the football stuff, that's cool. That's a platform. But being a good person, that to me, it lasts forever. And people will always remember that.
What I love about my platform is I have the opportunity to get to know guys like you under the helmet. You know, so many people turn on their TV and they know you guys based on stats. They know you guys based on your play. They know you from fourth and long. But you are truly changing and not living. And that's what I love about you. One of my favorite, like I said, days was sitting down with you and having a conversation about who you are, what your makeup is about. So please tell people where they can get a hold of you.
Yeah, go to my Twitter at Mr. Fourth and Long. The link is in my bio. And listen, people think sometimes, well, I can only donate $5. That works. Like, I make that stretch. My team makes that stretch. Like, I can get you a pack of socks and some drawers for $5. And there's some kids who need that. Yeah. Right. There's some kids who need that. And we have great partners like, you know, Old Navy and Great Vine Mills Mall who partners with us and really make sure that we get all the stuff that we need. And this has been a tumultuous year. This has been a year of just, man, body blow after body blow after body blow. And I get it. Some people won't be able to. And I tell people, if you're not able, pray. Mm-hmm. Please pray for me. Just. And if you're that is to me, pray that someone will see this and be able to give double. You know, I'm like, if you can't give, I'm cool with that. Pray for me. Pray for this. Pray for someone to send a donation that's tenfold of what you would have given. And to me, that's important as well. So if you can't give, pray for me. Pray for OJ Holly. Pray for Holly's helping hands and say, hey, you know, Lord, whoever the God that you believe in, or the spirits that you believe in, or the universe that you believe in, and saying, you know, send some good vibes his way. And if you can donate 5, 10, 15, 20, I mean, you know, one of the things the pandemic taught me was how much money we waste on little things, right? When you can't stop at Starbucks and get the $9 coffee, when you don't stop at the gas, when I stop at the gas station, sometimes I'll go and I'll get like a Slim Jim and a Red Bull. That's $7, right? You do that a couple times a week, that's $21. You do that, you know, 4 weeks out of the month, you're talking about the northern part of $100. It's like, dang, I do that on top of getting gas? You just don't think about those things. So, you know, it's like, hey, don't have Starbucks this morning. I know it may make some people crazy and make some people have road rage, but hey, don't get the Red Bull this time you go to the gas station and donate to Holly's Helping Hands, because it goes a long way and it can change the lives of children.
Well, we vibe with you. We appreciate you. Thank you for doing this show with us. And yeah. We look forward to having you on again. Friend of the show.
I love you guys, man. Anytime. You guys have been good to me, so I'm always going to be good to you.
All right, well, coming up on Sunday, the Cowboys get the Cincinnati Bengals in what you may term the Panay Sewell Bowl, because if the Cowboys whoever loses this game is going to be in prime position for that third overall pick and likely taking Panay Sewell, the Oregon offensive tackle. So it's not like there's not things still on the line for the Cowboys just because the playoffs are a pipe dream. We got draft position to worry about against the Bengals this week.
Or Bobby, do they go the Jimmy strategy and draft that quarterback behind their
stop
franchise
that. Stop
guy?
That. Stop that. I will entertain no Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, anything talk. Just pay Dak, Jerry. That's if you get nothing else out of this year, pay Dak Prescott.